We're holding on page Chaf Dalet in Bava Metzia. The first line, the next to last of the narrow lines, almost the end of Oysud Beis. We were talking about the point about Hamal ben Pnei Chaver Barabim, a person humiliates somebody else in public, and it's very serious, and Ein Lechelek Lam Abba, and it's considered Shefech Domim, and so forth. So the Gemara brings further in this connection, V'amamar Zutra Batuvia Omer Rav, so this is one of those popular statements that's attributed to a bunch of different Tanoim and Amoraim. Anyway, it's better off for a person to throw himself into a fiery furnace rather than humiliating somebody else publicly. Menolon, where do we see that from? Mitomer. We see that from the story with Tomer and Yehuda. As the pasuk says, he mutzes, as she was being, so what happens? She's pregnant, and then and Yehuda is told that tahine hora l'znunim, there's something, there's funny business having gone on over here. Now, she could easily tell that I'm pregnant from Yehuda and expose him as the one who was with her, but she didn't want to do that. So instead, he mutzes, as she's being taken out to be burnt, she sent a message to her father-in-law, to Yehuda, and she didn't openly say, you are the father of my babies. She says, Hako no, recognize, please, these three items that I belong to you, which gives him an out. He could deny the matter and say it wasn't his, or that she found them somehow. So this way she's giving him an out, so he doesn't have to be publicly embarrassed. The fact that he did, by the way, the Gemara says in other places, the fact that he did fess up to it in public is a very great thing. It's one reason why the Eibishter's name is included in his name. Yud Kei Vav Kei includes all the letters of it are included in Yehuda, and different other things, great things that happened to Shevet Yehuda as a result of that. But from her point of view, she wasn't going to tell on him publicly. If he admits, then good, and if not, then not. Tosfos actually brings a point. It's not that Tosfos is not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Anaf Yosef refers to it, that one way the Gemara may doubt in that, it's now the word he mutses literally means she's being taken out to be executed. But the word mutses without the aleph in it, if you read it as though that you didn't have the aleph, then it would be Meloshin Hatsosa, Meloshin setting something on fire. So as she's about to be set on fire, then even then she wouldn't openly go and say and tell on Yehuda. And then he goes on to discuss more points of how exactly that drasha takes place. There is, by the way, a very interesting explanation from Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid that says that actually they weren't planning to burn. And Rashi mentions on the pasuk why burning, because she's a bas koyin, because she's a descendant of shame, and a bas koyin shezin to the serefa. So it doesn't exactly match the halacha as we know from later times, because in particular now she's a penuya, she's not a married woman after all, she's only a shemeres yavam. But fine, you know, the idea there is still behind it that a bas koyin gets special treatment. There is an interesting explanation from Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, I think the Baal HaTurim also brings it on the pasuk, that they weren't planning to burn her in the first place, just to brand her. You find in different societies and throughout history, sometimes, especially women who would commit znus like that or different other serious crimes, they would take a hot iron and brand them on the skin with some mark. So according to that was what she was going to suffer if the facts didn't come out. But again, instead of telling on Yehuda, she just hints to it. Now, when we say noyach lo adam shiyapalatz mevakiv shana eish, there are a number of rishonim. Tosfos discusses earlier, and Rabbeinu Yonah discusses, and a number of other rishonim discuss that it may be more than just noyach lo. It may actually be required lahalacha to prevent being malbin pnei chaver benabim, that a person should literally go on mesiras nefesh. So they talk about why is this not included in, we know there's the big three of Rizorah, Gila, Arayis, Shvichas Domim, why is this not included? One explanation is because it is, we learned before in the Gemara, that Ki'ilu Shvichas Domim. Now, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, when it talks about the big three, it talks about you have the three themselves, the actual worshipping idols, actual Gili Arayis, etc. And then you also have what the Gemara calls over there, Abizrayu, like outgrowths of them. So one explanation is that halbanas panim, to embarrass somebody, is abizrayhu of shvichas damim, and therefore it's included in the same category. With that said, there are Rishonim, the Sefer Achinuch, the Meiri, a number of other Rishonim say that the Gemara doesn't literally mean that a person should be ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh for it. It's just one of those hyperbolic statements that the Gemara uses to express how severe it is to be Malbin Pnei Chaver Berabim, but not that a person should literally go and be ready to be burnt to avoid it. One example of that, though, that we do have, where a person was makalatsim of the kivshan eish, is the story with Ma'ukva and his wife, where they taka ran into an oven so that their neighbor that they're giving tzedakah to wouldn't find out who they are and be embarrassed.
The Midrash is anger people who talk in shul. He says you're not adults that first and shame them in front of everybody.
Okay, so sometimes you do have, there are times when it says that you have, in Shulchan Aruch, it actually says that a person talks in Shul, a person talks during davening, goyer and boy, you yell at him and rebuke him. So yeah, if it has to be done in public, sometimes, every rule has exceptions. We're saying that, you know, it's important not to be malbim pnei chaver berabim, but there are cases where that has to be done. Okay. So actually, that brings us to the next piece over here. Omer Rav Chanina Brei Derevidi, my dichtiv lo sonu ishas amisoi. Why does the pasuk say, do not wrong one person his amisoi? Now, a few psukim earlier, when it talks about a noas mammon, about not cheating somebody financially, it doesn't use the word amisoi, it just says ishas ochi. So why over here doesn't it use the same expression, ishas ochi? So the reason is, because we darshan the word amisoi, am she'itcha, the Torah of a mitzvah. Amisoi, we're darshaning as am itoi, the people who are with you, the people who are on the same page as you, the Torah of a mitzvah, as far as that they're committed to Torah of a mitzvah, al teinehu, then don't wrong him. In other words, the implication is, So Marshall says, well, exactly that, then a balavera, by all means, go ahead and humiliate him and go ahead and view a nos dvarim over here by him. A nos moment is not like that. A nos moment doesn't matter how frum, how much shomer Torah mitzvah a yid is. You're still not allowed to cheat him regardless. Even we learned in Baba Kama that even Gezel Goy is also. But when it comes to a nos dvarim, we're saying that's strictly for am she'it chob Torah mitzvah. So that answers your question. One way of looking at it is a person who's habitually talking in shul is not am she'it chob Torah of mitzvahs. He's showing himself by that. You know, you have the very sharp expressions that the Alter Rebbe uses about it, and you get a schofzal or a tanya, that he's showing that he has no chelik by the Kei Yisrael, and he's embarrassing the Shechina, v'chula v'chula, so therefore there's more of a reason to do that. You have the usual exception, of course, for Tinoch the Shenishbu, that's a whole other matter, but yeah. Omer Rav, in this connection, Rav says, La'olam yehe odem zohar by nas ishtoi. A man, her husband, should be especially careful as far as I know of his wife. Shemitoshidim osa mitsuya, because her tears are easily, or come easily. Women are more emotional than men, generally, so therefore she's more likely to cry. Aina osa kroiva, therefore the result of the aina is much quicker to come. Rashi explains, if the husband is ma'ana his wife, if he talks to her unfairly or meanly or whatever, then the punishment for it, minashamayim, is likely to come much faster because she cries out about it, and therefore that has more repercussions in Shemayim. As far as what we're saying, Am she'itcha b'Torah of mitzvahs, Ion Yaakov points out one meaning is that it also means to say an Eved Kanani is not necessarily in that category. Now, to be sure, the Rambam does write at the end of Hilchos Avodim that a Yid is naturally Rachman, the Gomer Chasadim, and is not going to treat his Avodim meanly, but nevertheless, there's no specific Isser of doing a Na'ah to them. The Gemara mentions in some other places about that you may be allowed. First of all, the Gemara mentions in Baba Kama in the halachas of boishes that we learned, we touched on a few weeks ago, that avodim are generally considered. There's no boishes if a person does something which to a ben chodin would embarrass him or humiliate him and has to pay for it. If the victim was an eved, then he doesn't. But also the Gemara mentions in some other places things that some of the chachamim would have their avodim do that would be degrading for a regular person, but because they're an eved, then those considerations don't apply. The Gemara continues, Omer Rav Elazar, Miyom Shechora Beis Hamikdash, from the day the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Ninalu Shari Tfila, the gates of Tfila have been locked. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Gam Ki Ezak Vashaveya, even though I scream out and I cry out, Sosam Tfilosi, Hashem has closed up my Tfila. So like, so to speak, the doors are closed and our Tfilas do not get through so easily. So Maharsha explains, what do we mean by that? Well, the most basic explanation is the gates of our tefillah are the Beis Mikdash. When Shlomo dedicated the first Beis Mikdash, he gave a long tefillah over there, and in the course of it, he asks again and again to Hashem that whenever anybody has any tzara, they come to the Beis Mikdash to daven, or if they're anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, then they face towards the Beis Mikdash and have that in mind. And if they're anywhere in the world, they face towards Eretz Yisrael, and that's why Adayim is there. We daven towards Yerushalayim. So now, the idea is, in other words, that was the gate through which everybody's tefillos would pass. The Beis Mikdash is destroyed. That gate is closed. So that's what we mean, sosam tefilosi. So he continues. Va'afa pisha shari tefillah ninalu, even though the gates of tefillah have been locked, shari d'mois l'ninalu, the gates of tears have not been locked. Those are open and those are available. A person cries, like we just said, a wife when her husband doesn't treat her nicely, l'ninalu, those are not locked, and those, the tears can always get through to the Eivishtet. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, David says in Tehillim, shima tefilosi Hashem, Hashem hear my tefillah, v'shav'osi ha'azina, and listen to and pay attention to my cry, el dim'osi al-techrash, to my tears, you will not be silent. So Rashi explains like this. The first part of the pasuk, shimas tefilasi, v'shav'osi ha'azina, is a request, like most of Tehillim. This is David requesting and pleading with Hashem to do that. But Rashi explains, the Gemara is taking it, Rebbe Elazar is taking it, that the last words, the next few words, el dim'osi al-techrash, is not a request. This is a statement. El dimosi al tefrash, you will not be silent to my tears, because, in other words, David is saying, it's Hashem's usual way to pay attention to tears and not to be silent. And Rashi points out, in other words, because the word al doesn't always mean don't. Sometimes the word al means it will not. Al yiten lamot yaglecha, for example, doesn't mean Hashem should not, is not allowed to let your feet stumble. It means Hashem will not. So the same way, so we see that there are cases where al can mean will not. Marshall says that sounds like a little bit of a doichet. So he gives a different explanation that you have to look at the continuation of the pasuk. David continues, there's a pasuk in Kapitel Lamed Tes. He says, El dimosi al techrash, ki ger onoichi imach, because I am a stranger with you. So that means, in other words, going back to this point, that we're like strangers, as in the gates of the chotzer, the gates of tefillah, are locked and I can't get in so easily. Unlike Toshav Kechol Avosa, my ancestors were residents, they were there, they were able to come there constantly because the Beis Mikdash was open and they were able to come to the Chotzer of the Eivishter, and they were in Eretz Yisrael. Me, I'm a ger, but David is speaking not necessarily on behalf of himself, but on behalf of the whole Jewish people. We are strangers in foreign lands, but nevertheless, so he explains like this, ki ger anochi imach Toshav Kechol Avosa, the word is like this, we are strangers with Hashem. We don't get to be in the chotzer of the Eivishter. We don't get to live in Eretz Yisrael, unlike my avoisai, my ancestors. And fakek, when we do try to settle in someplace in Golos and become a toshav, then we start having tzoras again, just like we find by Yaakov. You know, vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv, and right away the trouble begins. So we don't even get any peace in Olam Hazeh, unlike our ancestors who sometimes were able to live the Shalva. But therefore we're saying why, so that explains, if I care to explain, so the Pasuk is not so much coming to explain how we know that the gates of tears are open, but rather how we know that the gates of tefillah are locked, because that's what we're saying. We're being excluded from the gates and from the gates and the courtyards of Hashem. So one point is that's only biyachid. When people daven b'tzibur, the Eivishter mentions in other places, the Eivishter never rejects the tefillah of the tzibur. So in that sense, the shari tefillah are always open for that. And again, if it's accompanied by tears, we're saying, Maharshal also adds another point as well, as far as the previous pasuk that we said, sosam tefilasi. Now the word sosam is usually spelled with a samach. Samach sof mem is the shoresh that means to close up. But here we have it spelled with a sin. Now, that same word with a shin instead of a sin actually means to open up. Shesum ha'oyin, for example, Bilam's eye was open. It means that one eye was open and the other one was blinded. It means that one was open, as in it was gouged out, so the actual eye socket was open. Whatever the case, the shodash shin sof mem means to open. So here what it means is, nectar, that gamki ezak bashaveya, when I cry and I scream out, then my tefillas are not yet being accepted just because of that. But sosam, how does Hashem open up the door? Tefilosi, when I daven. So that implies, in other words, the gate is locked, but a sincere tefillah can open it up. So according to that, we don't mean it's locked as in the tefillas won't come in b'chlal. We just mean that it takes effort, unlike before, where it could take just ezak bashaveya. Now you need to have kavana in tefillah in order for it to get through. As far as what we're saying, by the way, that Shari Dmoris Leninalu, the gates of tears are not locked, there's a cute vert on that says, well then, in that, if tears always get through, then why do there need to be gates in the first place? Just the door should just be open. And there's a vert on, and I think from a simple bonum of Pshischa, I don't remember, who says, because after all, there needs to be something to filter out the insincere tears from the sincere ones. So in that sense, there needs to be a gate, but so not all the tears are going to make it through, but the sincere ones will. The Gemara goes on. Of Omar Rav, speaking of, so we're talking about the proper relationship between a husband and wife. They have to be very careful not to be ma'ana her, because we said she cries, she's more prone to crying. So now, in this connection, let's talk more about the proper relationship between husband and wife. Of Omar Rav, a husband who follows his wife's advice, noifel b'gehenim, is going to wind up falling into Gehenim. Shenemar, as we find by Achav, Ratlo, Hoyaka Achav, Gomer. Now, there was none of the kings of Yisrael, or Yehuda for that matter, there were none of them who were as bad as Achav, and the pasuk finishes off, Asher he sata oiso Yizevel Ishtoi, that his wife Yizevel, convinced him to do all kinds of evil things. In fact, Marsha brings a relevant piece of Gemara from Sanhedrin that says, like this, you have Yeravam ben Nevat is usually the standard against which all later kings who were Rishoyim are measured. Every time you have a king of Yisrael or Yehuda, it will always say he followed in the sins of Yeravam ben Nevat, or he was like Yeravam ben Nevat or whatever. But here, the Gemara says, the lesser Averis that Achav did were equal to the worst Averis that Yeravam did. So you see how bad Achav was, and he lost this. He's one of the ones that lost his place in El Amba. Why? Because Yizevel convinced him to do Averis. What? And so like this. So there's a vote on that says the white Zocha Ezer Lo Zocha Kenegdo. There's a well-known, the Gemara says that, there's a well-known vote on that, yeah, if he's Zocha, if he's acting in the proper way, the Eivishta makes that his wife will be an Ezer to him. And if he's going in the wrong way, then her job is supposed to be, and the Eivishta will make it happen, that she'll be Kenegdo, that she'll be opposite him in order to convince him to go in the right way. But here it was Fakert. He's already willing to go bad, and Yizevel kept on convincing him to do worse and worse. We find in the example, you know, one example of that is the story with Novos in his vineyard. Achav goes over one day to his neighbor of Novos and says, I'd like to buy your vineyard and turn it into a vegetable garden. And Novos says, absolutely not, I'm not selling. So what happens? Achav just goes home all upset. You know, as far as he's concerned, the story is over. He's going to sulk about it, but there's not a lot that he can do about it. Comes Yizevel and tells him, I'll show you how to be a king. And she has him trump up charges against Novos and get him executed and so on and so forth, the whole thing. So we see examples of that, of how Yizevel turned Achav to the wrong way. We find a lot of other examples in the Gemara of how a wife has an effect on her husband, whether Latoiva or the opposite. There's a medrash, I think, that tells about one time there was a couple, a tzaddik and a tzaddikus, where they were married for many years, but they were childless. So he divorced her, and each one of them remarried. The tzaddik married her to Shas, the tzaddikus married her to Rosha. And each marriage, the wife turned the husband to her ways. So the tzaddik married to the Shas eventually went off the derech. The tzaddikus who was married to the Rosha, she eventually got him to become a Baal Tshuva. Here what the Gemara is saying, don't listen to your wife, but wait. So Omalei Rapopal Abaya, so the Papa asked Abaya Baha Amri Inchi, what about the popular expression? And these popular expressions, you could say, okay, you know, it's Amayor, it's saying it, who cares? But the Gemara always assumes that these popular expressions have a certain truth in them as well. And the expression is, Itzach Gutza, if your wife is short, bend down and whisper to her, meaning in other words, pay attention to what she has to say. She may be physically shorter than you, and maybe mentally and spiritually and whatever shorter than you, but bend down and listen to what she has to say. So you see that you should listen. You see that you should follow her advice. So the answer, by the way, you know, here we're coming up in a few weeks is Hanukkah, so it's a Hazman Grama to talk about it. There's a vort up in Kabbalah that explains like this, you know, we light the menorah ideally within 10 tefachim of the ground. In practice, you know, it really depends what you have room for, but in principle, the menorah is supposed to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. So it's brought on that in that connection. Usually you have la'olam la'yod ha'shchina la'mata ma'asara, the Gemara says. Usually the Shechina doesn't descend below 10 tefachim, but here, unusually, like this expression over here, the Shechina is the Eibishter, so to speak, willing to bend down to us, the shorties, and listen to what we have to say, and rest on the candles of the menorah. Anyway, so you see that you should listen to her. So the answer is like Kasha Hobimili de Alma Hobimili de Besa. It depends. Are we talking about worldly matters in the outside world, or are we talking about household matters? In household matters, she's the expert. Defer to her. She knows what she's talking about. Bend down and hear what she has to say. But when it comes to Mili de Alma, keep in mind, you know, back then, especially most women didn't generally work outside the house. Most of the time they stayed home all day. So they're not going to know so much about what's going on in the wider world. And to be able to give good advice about that, then we have what Rav was saying, that a man is better off not listening to her because he'll be more experienced in what's going on in the world outside. Lichnachrina, another version, Habamili de Shmaya, Habamili de Alma. Another way of looking at the distinction is, it depends whether we're talking about things of Ruchnius, or things having to do with the Eibishter, with Shemayim, Habamili de Alma, versus Gashmius. So Gashmiistic things, by all means, listen to her advice. But when it comes to Ruchnistic matters, then you should realize that often you know better. Again, obviously, it's going to depend on specific circumstances in every marriage, but by and large, we can say that way. Up here, the Zoya, by the way, mentions, for example, when it comes to Avraham and Sarah, that Avraham represents the Neshama, and Sarah represents the Guf. So that fits very nicely with this also, that the husband is the final, has the final word in Mili Dishmaya, in matters involving the Neshama, whereas the wife has the wife's advice is the one to listen to when it comes to Mili D'Alma, to matters involving the Guf. Minhagim, go according to the Minhagim as a practical matter. Yeah, if they come from different backgrounds, Minhagim go according to the husband. Yeah, that's true. You know, again, I mean, by a Yid, you know, by a Yiddish Gashmius is Ruchnius, so many times it'll come out that the Mili D'Alma do in fact have a strong influence on Mili D'Shmaya as well. So yeah, everything has to be weighed in its proper way, which one pertains more to one versus to the other. They tell a joke in that connection, I think, something along the lines of where a husband says about himself and his wife that she makes all the big decisions and or she makes all the little decisions and I make all the big ones. The little decisions are like, yeah, the things around the house. What are we going to have for dinner? And where are we going to send the kids to school? And then which school we're going to send the kids to? And that sort of thing. The big things, I have the final say. Let's say, for example, what should the president do? What should Congress do? That sort of thing. Yeah. Fine. The Gemara continues. Speaking of, we were saying about gates that are closed and gates that are open. All the gates are locked except for the gates of Einah. When a person is crying out to the Eibishter because of Einah's dvarim, then that gate is not locked. Then the Eibishter is going to pay attention to it and do something about it. Now, we said before, Marashah points out, we just said that all the gates are closed except for Shari Dmois. Except for gates of tears. And Marshall says, very simple. I mean, so we're talking, these two things go together. A person is hurt by a nostrum, he's more likely to cry. So the two things go together. Ashara and Na and Shara Dima are really basically the same thing. So Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Hine Hashem nitzav al choymas anoch. Behold, Hashem is standing on a wall of anoch. Now, the simple meaning of anoch is a plumb line. You ever watch builders build a house or build a wall, build any kind of structure? They're going to use a piece of rope, a piece of string with a weight tied to the bottom of it, so that when they put that when they're measuring where the wall is going to be, and when they're measuring the courses of bricks or whatever, to make sure that it's perfectly vertical. So that's called a plumb line in English. In Hebrew, it's called anoch. So now, the simple meaning of the pasuk is Hashem is standing by a wall that was built with a plumb line like that, built very exactly. But now over Yodah, Amnachon, he was holding a plumb line. So in Parshat Pshat, it's the Pasuk is saying that the Navi is seeing the Eved Shel like that, representing that Hashem is gonna measure out strict justice to the Jewish people. The Pasuk continues that the Hashem says to him, what do you see? And it almost describes what he sees. And Hashem says, this is a simon that the Loy Oisif Oida Verloy, I'm not gonna give the Jewish people a break anymore. I've given them enough of a break. They keep on doing Avedis. It's time for their punishment. But now the Gemara is doushing differently. The word Anoch is Meloshin Oinah. So Hashem is standing on a wall that was built by Oinah over Yodai, and in his hand, like, so to speak, directly, Hashem's direct concern, Anoch is the Oinah. So we see that Hashem is standing over there and holding that, showing that Hashem is going to take care of the matter right away, and then, in other words, there's no gate is going to block that. Marshall explains, in other words, the mushal of it is that the mushal of it is, let's say, for example, you have the city gates are closed, you're not going to see what's going on outside. But if you stand up on the wall, you're going to see, and obviously no gate is going to be blocking you because you're standing on top of the wall. So the same way, when it says the Eved Shel is standing on top of a wall of Anoch, then it represents, in other words, that Hashem is looking directly at the Anoch and is going to take care of the matter, and then no gate is going to block it. The Rif also points out over here another possible meaning is the word choima might be darshin meloshin chema, that it means that there's chemas anoch, there's anger for anoch for the oinah. Amar Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar continues in this vein, hakol nifra bidei shliach, everything else that a person does wrong, the Eibishter punishes him through a shliach, chutz me oinah, except for doing oinah to a fellow yid, shenemo, who yodai anoch, because we're saying the anoch is in Hashem's hand, so it's directly in Hashem's hand, and he's going to use it. Rabbi Bohu continues in this vein. Gimel ena pargoid nino b'fnehem. There were three cases where the pargoid is a curtain, a mechitza. So to speak, it's a curtain between, Rashi describes, ben shchina l'tzva morim, between the shchina and the hosts of heaven. In terms of chassidus, we talk about we refer to those, for example, there's the prosa. We talk about there's a veil, a curtain between atzilus and biyah, between one world and the next. So that's represented over here in the Gemara terminology by the paragud, the curtain. So there's three cases where the ena paragud ninam b'fnehem, the paragud, this partition, is not locked in their presence, meaning, in other words, that Hashem directly sees what's going on. I mean, Hashem sees everything, but in other words, Hashem pays closer attention to these things and pays attention to them and continues to do so until he's gonna execute the punishment or the person does tshuva, as the case may be. Now, Marsha explains, before we were talking about gates. Gates, we were talking about, there are gates that are closed, that's after the Churban. Here we're talking about even when the Beis Mikdash is standing. So there's still an open gate, but you always have, there's a paragud, there's a partition, there's a veil for tznius, basically. The Gemara mentions in a similar vein, as far as the Beis Mikdash, for example, you had, let's say, the doors of the Heichel were kept open during the day. But then similarly, there were gates all around the Azara that were kept open during the day, but each one of them had a curtain hanging over it for tznius. So people don't stand outside and stare inside. It wouldn't be respectful. So in the same vein over here, in Shemayim, there are gates, but then even when the gates are open, there's still a partition representing there's still a separation between the Borda and the Nivroim. But here we're saying there are three things where that paragraph doesn't stand in the way of that. So, Oino, the Gezel, the Avodis Kechavim. So, how do we see each of them? Oino, Dichtivu, Yodai Anoch. We just said the pasuk that Hashem has Anoch in his hand, implying that it's something that Hashem deals with, so to speak, on a personal level, and that there's no partition between him and, those things. So that's what Marashar explains. Before we needed a pasuk to say that the gate is never closed. Here we're talking about just the word anoch itself. The word of there's two things. Nitzav achemas anoch suggests what we were saying before, that the gates are not locked for anoch. Instead, Hashem, so to speak, stands on top of the wall and watches what's going on, without having to be blocked by any gate. Now we're saying that even as far as the paragud, there isn't even that, because of yodei anoch, the anoch is in Hashem's direct hand. Gezel, where do we see that Hashem does the same thing with Gezel? Bichtiv, because the pasuk says, Chamas Vashoid, Yishama Bah Al Ponai Tomid. Chamas, which in Gemara terminology we've talked about before, that Chamas is not exactly the same as Gezel. Gezel is a person steals without paying. Chamas is a person forces the other person to give him the thing and then pays for it. But in Tanakh, they're basically synonyms. So chomos, so gezel, robbery, vashoid is another word for robbery and unfairness. Yishama boh alponai tomid is heard in it, speaking about in Yerushalayim, in front of my face constantly. So we see that the fact that it's in front of Hashem's face, so to speak, means there's no mechitza there. Avodas Kechavim, where do we see Avodas Zara is in the same category? Dichtiv, a pasuk says, Ha'om hamachisim oisi alponai tamid, the people that are angering me to my face constantly, and the pasuk goes on to describe, we're talking about Ovid Avodas Zara. So we see that all those things and the power good doesn't get in the way of them. All of those are things that Hashem takes directly involved, and then things happen because of it. Continues the Gemara, more on the topic of Shalom Bayis. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam yehe adam zohar b'tzvua b'seth beisei. A person should always be careful with the grain in his house, make sure that there's enough of it. She'ein meriva mitzuya b'seth beisei shal adam el al iske tzvua. Because when do you find fights and arguments in the house is over matters of grain. When there's not enough food, then arguments begin. Shenema, as the pasuk says, some gvulich shalom. Hashem makes your borders peaceful. Chelav chitim yasbiach. Hashem satisfies you with the fat or the cream of wheat. So we see these two things go together. When you're satisfied with the best of wheat, chelav often means the best, like kol chelav Hashem. So when you have the best of the wheat, then you have shalom in your borders, implying, and if not, then not. Now Maharshad does point out, the Gemara does tell us in Bava Basra, it was a few days ago in Shloisha Prakim of Rambam, that you're not allowed to hoard produce. When in years of famine in particular, you're not allowed to hoard produce because then that drives up the prices and causes inflation. So we're not talking about over here to have a huge storage of it in his house, but we're talking about to have enough for a year's supply. So you have so to have that helps with Shalom Bayis. So the Papa says, this is like the expression that people say, Kad Mishlam Sairi Mikada, when the barley, and we're talking about not even wheat anymore, here we're talking about barley, like the lower class food, when that's gone from the jar, Nokish Va'osi Tigra Babesa, then argument comes knocking on the door, so arguments come knocking on the door. In other words, then arguments are more likely to proliferate. Rashi gives another explanation, is that when the jar is full, if you bang on it, it won't make much of a noise. But when it's empty, then you bang on it, and then it makes a louder noise. So therefore, that represents, in other words, that when the jar is empty, then you hear noises when you bang on it, then you know Tigra Babesa, that quarrels are coming to the house. So in other words, like you don't even have wheat anymore. All you have left is barley, and therefore that causes arguments and that causes quarrels in the house. An interesting vort, by the way, and when we're saying Hassam Gvulich Sholem, there's a vort I think from Hassam Sofer that says that why specifically Gvulich? Because in other words, a person always has to have certain red lines that he's not going to cross. So different people is going to be different things, but it's good if a person's red line, that this is a border that will not be crossed, is shalom. That he's going to commit himself, that he's never going to cross that border from shalom into the opposite, then that makes things much better in the house. Continues the Gemara. Va'amar abchinen abat papa, la'olam yehe adam zohar b'tvur b'seich beisei. A person should always be careful with the supply of grain in his house. Because we see there was a time in Jewish history when the Jewish people were called poor only because they were lacking in grain. Shenemar, as the pasuk is, v'hoyim, they're talking about in the times of the Shoftim, during one of the periods in the time of the Shoftim, v'hoyim, every time, you know, they had this constant cycle where they'd do Averis, and the Eibishter would send some Goyish nation to harass them for a while, and then they'd do Tshuva, and the Shoftim of that time would go and defeat the enemy, and they'd have a couple of decades of peace, and then afterwards the Shoftim would pass away, and the whole thing started all over again. So now, there was one point when they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, doing other Averis, so now the powerful nation was Midian. By the way, there's an interesting thing mentioned on that in that connection. You find throughout Sefer Shoftim, every time it was a different nation that was harassing him. One time it's Aram, one time it's Moab, one time it's Ammon, or different ones. You never had the same one repeat. That was actually a chesed of the Edishti, because what happens is, Mela, the first time they come and invade the country and try to take it over, then okay, you know, they're not going to be quite so vicious about it. But if they were defeated and they remember that they were defeated and then they come back again, you got what to worry about. Then they're going to be much, much meaner about it. So therefore, the Edishti did a chesed that every time it was a different nation, so they don't suffer too much from them. With one exception, the Plishtim, you do find them dealing with the Plishtim over and over. Why? Because we had in the last couple of parashiyos, the Plishtim made treaties with Avraham and Yitzchak, so that alone held them back a little bit. That alone, they respected those treaties, not completely, but they respected them at least ad kedei kach, that they wouldn't completely mistreat the Jews, unlike the other nations. Anyway, so the pasuk describes v'hoyeim zara yisrael, when the Jewish people would plant their crops. So the pasuk continues, the Midianim would come and invade the land and camp against them, and they would grab all the crops and everything. And the pasuk says, the Jewish people became very poor because of Midian. So we see why are they called poor, because they lost all their grain. That Marsha brings from the Psukim over there, actually, that now the Psukim also mention that they also would grab all the animals. So maybe you should say they're considered Dalim because they lost the animals. But Marsha explains because, like this, the Psukim mention, it does mention that they would take the animals as well. They would take all the sheep and oxen and donkeys. True. But the fact is, the pasuk continues that right before by Yidar Yisrael, it says the Midianim would come together with their animals, and they would go and consume all the crops in the land, because the people and the animals would be eating all the crops. And then it says by Yidar Yisrael Ma'od. So therefore, we understand that by Yidar refers more to the grain than anything else. Why? Because grain is more essential to life. So if they didn't have animals, okay, they don't have meat, big deal. But they don't have grain, then that's serious business. Then they're lacking what they need for essential living, and therefore they're called Vayidar Yisrael, or the Jewish people were very poor. So a person has to be careful not to get in that situation. Eitz Yosef brings another point as well, that we find by the seven skinny cows of Pare's dream. They're called Dalois Verois Toyar. And that was what were the dreams about? But there's going to be a lack of grain. So we see also that Dal has to do with a lack of grain. V'omer Reb Chelboy, in this connection, also Reb Chelboy says, L'olam yehei odem zohar b'kvoid ishtar. A man should always be careful with the covet of his wife. Because bracha is found in a man's house only for the sake of his wife. As we find, we find by Avraham and Sarah in Mitzrayim that the Pare did good to Avraham because of Sarah. Marsha explains the drasha is like this. In the simple meaning, you would say when it says hated Bavura, who did good? So Rashi explains on the pasuk that sometimes you have a pasuk that leaves out the subject of a sentence, and we understand it means the one who has the power to do it. In that case, obviously it means Pare. But the fact is, it doesn't say Avram hated Pare Bavura. Therefore, that leaves the Gemara room to Darshan. The hated is referring to the Eivishter. The Eivishter did good to Avraham because of Sarah. Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has an interesting explanation of this piece of Gemara and some other related pieces. One thing he points out, the word avur in Aramaic and rarely in Lashon Kodesh means grain. So therefore, it fits very nicely with what we just said. Be careful about the grain supply. So now he's saying you'll have ba'avura. You'll have Avraham had a blessing in his avur, in his grain, because of Sarah. He mentions also that this that we're saying, Rav Chelboy is saying this, that ties in with before we had Chelev Chitim Yasbiech. So it all connects together in that way. Thus we find that Rava said to the people of Mechuza, which is where he lived, give honor to your wives, in order that you should become rich. So we see, in other words, that you show covet to your wives, and for that you'll have the schus to become rich. One point in that connection, actually, the Rebbe brings in a note on that essay from Rav Levi Yitzchak. We find in other Gemaras that Rava himself criticizes the women of Mechuzah. They didn't used to work for a living. They were very pampered, spoiled women, and in fact, Rava himself calls them in a different place, like they're robbing from their husbands by not contributing to the family economy, and by they have expensive tastes, and therefore their husbands may feel the need to steal. Nevertheless, Rava is telling his Balabatim, still honor your wives despite all that, because you'll get riches in those chus. Rabbi Levick also, by the way, goes on to mention here, we just mentioned about Avram Avinu having a bracha for the sake of Sarah, and he explains Api Kabbalah, there's a strong connection between Rava and Avram, which is why that Dr. Rava is saying this drasha. In addition, Rashi mentions the expression over here. Rashi says that what is Mechuza? Ir Shahaya Rava Dor B'Soicha Kachshma. That was the name of the city where Rava lived. So Rav Levick points out there's gematrios and there's things that relate that you can actually relate the name Rava to the name Mechuzah in mathematically, and show that literally the name Rava can be extracted from Mechuzah using gematrios. So you can literally say, as Rashi says, that Rava lives in Mechuzah. He also explains like this. We find by Avram Avinu in Parshas Lech Lecha, Toya Dvar Hashem al Avram b'machze lemer, that Hashem appeared to Avram in a vision, and machze is similar to the word mechuzah. So all of this idea that Rava has a special connection with Avram, and therefore having brought this drasha about Avram, is why it's Dr. Rava that's telling his balabatim in mechuzah to follow in Avram's ways and do the same thing.
That's
Rava with an aleph, yes.
Yeah,
that's one of them. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things, right? To love Rome, hey, yeah, the word, right. There's something also from the Arizal in that connection, talking about when Loit was captured, that it says they took Rechushai ben Achi Avraham, and Rechushai ben Achi is Rosh Tevis Rava, so Rava's neshama was mixed up in all of that. It's a whole concept of Kabbalah of Rava's neshama being involved in that whole story. Okay. Yonye Mashiach Gola, Vav Kislev. The Friedrich Rebbe announced and was mefarsim and informed everybody that we've already completed the whole avodah, even polishing the buttons. We've finished already the imdu hochem kochem to everybody be standing and ready for Mashiach. So everything is really a kol mochem l'soda. Everything is ready for the soda Mashiach. Take off from Yad Mamash. So the Rebbe says in a sicha following up from that. So we have to be mefarsim. We have to publicize in every place that we are at the end. We're at the final stages. Ma'aseinu v'avodaseinu of kiseitza l'mochom aleivecha. We're already at the beginning of the period of the reward of matan sforim shal tzaddikim being paid. Whereas you have after kiseitza l'mochom aleivecha, the next parasha is v'hoya kisav el ha'aretz, that you'll come into Eretz Yisrael and possess it and take possession of it. Take it from Yad Mamash. Continuing with halachas of hashkamas haboker, specifically with netilas yadayim, so we started talking about that you have to wash negovas when you get up in the morning. So one reason for it is because during the night you've probably touched parts of your body that are dirty and that are usually covered. So there's a pasuk that expresses this idea. Erchatz minikoyim kapay. Yavon HaMelech says, "I'll wash my hands in cleanliness. Vasovas mizbach Hashem, and I'll walk around your mizbeach and circle your altar Hashem. Lashmiya b'kol toy devagomer, to raise my voice in thanksgiving." So we see that a prerequisite for all of that is erchatz minikoyim kapay. Now, it is true that if a person doesn't have water, before, in general, a person has to wash his hands before davening. If he doesn't have water, the halacha is, he can wipe his hands on anything that will cleanse them. Because the pasuk doesn't say erchatz b'mayim, it says erchatz b'nikoyen. I'll wash my hands in cleanliness, implying that if you don't have water, then you use something else to clean them. So that is true, and it mentions that later on in Hilchos Tefillah. Nevertheless, there is a mitzvah to go and look for water up to a mil away. It talks about it there in Simonsetic Vase, and he also, even if a person is on a trip, then still he should be willing to retrace his steps up to a mil. So for example, at home you don't usually have an issue, but let's say for example you're camping out or something, make sure that you're someplace where there's water available for Negovasa, and then be willing to walk up to a mil if necessary. You make a bracha on Alon Tzilas Yadayim, same as you make a bracha on most mitzvahs that are banan. So now, this is all as far as this is all as far as when a person wakes up in the morning. He needs to make that effort to have water and walk even a mil for the purpose. However, when it comes to learning Torah or mentioning Hashem's name, with the exception of Kriya Shema and Tefillah, then taka, it's true. A person is supposed to wash his hands before those things, but there, if he doesn't have water, he doesn't specifically have to look for it. He just wipes his hand with whatever there is. And that would mean then that if he want, that even if a person before davening, before saying Hashem's name or whatever, washes his hands, he wouldn't make a bracha on it. So in other words, in short, a person makes a bracha for Al Matil Shadayim, for Negev Asur in the morning, but when a person is going and washing his hands before davening, then he doesn't make a bracha on it, because if there's no water available, he could equally well wipe his hands on something else, and it would be equally valid in order to make brachas and daven, with the exception of Kriya Shema and Tefillah. However, when it comes to the 3 daily tefillahs, when it comes to Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv, there Yitaka do have to go up to a mill to find water. That's all according to the Svara, and that would mean, according to the Svara, in effect, you would be required to say Al Natilus Yadayim when you wash before the Tefillas as well, if you have to wash your hands because you're not clean. So that's all according to one Svara, which is, in other words, that the basic reason for Natilus Yadayim in the morning is because your hands are dirty, and the same thing would equally well apply before the Tefillas. So the difference is, in the morning, or before the 3 daily Tefillas, you have to wash with water, unless there's no water available within a meal, therefore you make a bracha on it. Whereas when it comes to other things, when it comes to saying other brachas, so learning Torah or whatever, you should wash your hands, but you don't have to look for water, therefore you wouldn't say a bracha on it. Now, he's going to go on to say, in the next piece, nevertheless, we only make Al Natilus Yadayim when we wash Negev Asur in the morning, and not the other times, for reasons that he's going to go on to discuss. That's the next piece that he's going to discuss, Ruach Ra in the morning now. That's what he's saying. Practically speaking, we don't make a bracha when we wash before Shacharis and Minchah Ma'ariv. Yeah.